Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. March 14, 2021. My thoughts on Twitter March 14, 2021. I vote for a government that can ensure safety in Israel. The main idea that drives me is unity of the nation, but unity can exist only with those who are alive, not with those who have died. Indifference to the elections 2021. If we weren't surrounded by enemies, awaiting our weakness to attack, there would be no point in having elections. If not for national security, we could just sleep. The elections should be taken seriously, without succumbing to despair. It's time to wake up. Surrender to win. If we were able to defeat the evil inclination that confuses us, if we could rise against it like heroes and were able to bestow, if we could capture our will to receive and bend it, then we would only increase our egoism. It would have inflated even more. Therefore, there is no way to reach bestowal unless through a special transition. We discover that the will to receive is not worthy of anything, but we cannot overcome it. Therefore, we depend on the upper force, which is outside of us. We cling to this upper force and want to grow only with its help, as if we enter the womb of the upper degree as an embryo and there we completely nullify ourselves. We wish that the upper one will mold us, into whatever form it wants. In this form, we are already beginning to grow on the other side of the maxim in the quality of bestowal. There is no choice. We must give up and raise our hands, as it is written, "And it came to pass that the sons of Israel sighed because of the work, and they cried out, and their cry because of the work went up to God. And God heard their groaning." However, this is only after we have done everything possible and have reached a complete breakdown, the point where we cannot continue like this. What we can do is only to cry out to the Creator. And it will be a perfect cry because we are sure that we depend only on the upper force and have no chance to reach what we want with our own forces. This cry is actually from the unsuccessful work, that is, it requires at least a group, a ten, and only then can we reach a true cry and receive the help of the upper force, the reforming light, which takes us from the intention for our own sake to the intention for the sake of bestowal. Thus, we escape Egypt. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson March 11, 2021, Pesach, Passover. On the other side of the final sea. Passover is an extremely important holiday, a state underlying the entire spiritual development of man. Passover means a transition, that is, we leave one place and enter another. We make the transition from the desire to receive for our own sake to the desire to receive for the sake of bestowal. The direction of this desire changes, to bestow upon one's neighbor and through it to bestow upon the Creator. That is why Passover is so important to us. It builds the whole foundation of a spiritual person. By the fact that a person is drawn to learn more about this holiday, you can feel a strong spiritual foundation in him. The desire to become like the Creator is expressed in a request to Him to correct our egoistic desire, for its restriction, for the screen that does not allow us to use the desire for our own sake, and for its gradual transition into the desire for bestowal. All this happens with the help of the reforming light called the Light of Passover. These are the upper forces that come to us, and just like an adult takes a child by the hand and leads him, so the light takes us out of our egoistic desire to the desire for bestowal. This transition is called the Exodus from Egypt. There is nothing more important in spiritual development than getting out of Egypt. Therefore, all subsequent actions of bestowal are based on a memory of leaving Egypt, that is, they became possible because we made this transition from egoism to bestowal. This action is caused by the reforming light, that is, a special illumination of the Creator from above to give, which affects us, more and more, and grows the desire to achieve bestowal in us. We begin to feel unimportant in this world, although it would seem that we have everything for egoistic fulfillment. But we want something more. We do not yet know what we are missing, but we are approaching the desire for bestowal. In this way, the Creator brings us closer to Him from afar. From within our egoism He grows us proud of the desire for bestowal, one form within another. Then we will learn to attract the light that reforms, and we will see its action in ourselves, how it overturns the egoistic desire, makes a restriction on it, and then directs it to bestowal. It is in those places, in the desires, where we sought egoistic fulfillment that we now want to be filled altruistically. It is like a child growing up. While he is small, he just grabs everything and pulls it to himself. But when he grows up, he understands that it is by connecting with others that you can fulfill yourself more, and by giving to someone you love, you get fulfillment yourself. Even in this world we find that it is possible to enjoy the actions of bestowal. Thus, a person gradually grows from the animate to the human level. Exiting Egypt, from egoism into the desire to bestow, is the beginning of man's true spiritual development. Therefore, this is a very difficult and lengthy process, and until a person goes through it in all the details assigned to him according to the root of his soul, he will not be worthy to leave Egypt. In essence, all of humanity goes through these stages of development. That is why we exist in this world. But there are people who have already felt the need to know the root of life, the spiritual root. Therefore, we only have to actualize this exit into spirituality, to finish the whole process of development in Egypt, in our egoistic desire, to hate it. That is, to realize its evil and to pray to the Creator. Then the Creator will act on us, with a special light, a force that can pull us out of egoism and into bestowal. And if we unite to be one nation, one group, we will come out of our egoistic intention and feel that we are rising above it to the force of bestowal. Then we will begin to experience the spiritual world beyond Egypt, beyond the waters of the final sea. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, March 10, 2021, Pesach, Passover. The Secret of Eternal Spiritual Fulfillment. In the corporeal world, fulfillment extinguishes pleasure. If I am hungry and start to eat, then gradually I satisfy my hunger and lose my appetite, and along with the appetite, the pleasure disappears. As a result, I remain empty, a complete zero, and so it is with everything. Fervent love that flared up at first gradually becomes routine and cools down. Habit dulls the taste of pleasure and eventually kills it, which leads to death. But spiritual life is eternal and perfect because even before entering spiritual actions, we learn how to make them eternal and perfect, that is, our desire does not disappear but only grows. You must understand that desire is the main thing, and you must constantly work on its growth and quality. Therefore, spiritual progress is determined by how developed and multifaceted our desire is, that includes all sorts of shades of properties prepared for us by the Creator when Adam HaRishon was shattered. And we cherish this desire so that not a single particle disappears from it. We make sure that all desires exist and support each other, that they grow enriching one another, and it is through this that we reach the full light of Naron Hai, the end of correction. The difference between the corporeal and the spiritual world is that in corporeal actions, fulfillment extinguishes the desire. And in spirituality, we learn how to increase the desire more and more by receiving pleasure. Therefore, desire is the main thing for us, not the fulfillment. After all, the fulfillment depends entirely on the growth of the desire and its correct positioning. I begin to enjoy the desire itself, the fact that it grows and gets stronger. This is a completely different work because I do not care about fulfilling my desire. After all, there is always infinite content in the upper world, and I only need to worry about having the right desire all the time and growing it as much as possible. Therefore, our prayers, requests, and praises to the Creator are so important. Any appeal to Him, because they determine our state and fulfillment. In fact, I enjoy the desire that I have in me. That is why the torments of first love are so sweet. They are the ones that give pleasure, not corporeal fulfillment. Fulfillment comes and goes and leaves emptiness behind. It is the yearning that is capable of filling the soul and remains in the memory. We see that all works of art speak of mental anguish, aspirations, and prayer. Therefore, we must not forget that genuine fulfillment comes from yearning for the loved one. If fulfillment only increases the desire, this is a sign that we are in spirituality. Only when striving to give out from myself do I not suppress the filling but expand the room for it and increase it. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson March 8, 2021, everything is obtained by the power of prayer. We can only ask. Man must be convinced of his complete helplessness, must have lost all hope to reach spirituality by his own forces. This is a very important conclusion, and it takes a long time for a person to understand that there is not even one quality in him with which he can succeed except for the only chance the Creator left, connection with him. The only thing a person can do is to ask and nothing else. In everything else I am just an animal, and only a tiny thread connects me with the Creator. By grasping this thin thread, I can climb from the degree of an animal to the degree of man. This discovery can take years for a person to understand and start asking. He asks for one thing only, for the force of bestowal. I want to bestow to my friends, to bestow to the Creator. I do not want to remain an animal, I want to become a man. And here a question arises. Why do I need the degree of man? What is my intention? Is it unpleasant for me to be at the animate level or do I want to bestow? Maybe I hope that at the spiritual degree it will be better for me, for my egoism. This still needs to be clarified in order to cross the border from the corporeal to the spiritual world. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson March 5, 2021, everything is obtained by the power of prayer. In the labyrinth, the Creator arranges all states of man in such a way that they all direct him to search for the upper force, the source of life. He engineers everything so that man constantly stumbles against a wall. After many bangs against the wall, this labyrinth finally brings him to the correct appeal. A person learns how to turn to the Creator and with what request, and in return, the Creator gives him the force of bestowal out of his own forces. That is when a person becomes a man, Adam, that is, similar to the Creator according to the force he received from him. This is how he begins to come out of his egoism, like a sprout breaking out from the ground, and to correctly build himself with understanding and awareness. However, the Creator constantly sets new conditions for him against this growth, and each time a person must find a way to turn them into favorable conditions and advance until he reaches the goal. The most important thing is to see that all the conditions we receive both in spirituality and in corporeality, individually and collectively, come from above, from the Creator, in order to arrange us, and take us, through the labyrinth that leads to the entrance of the spiritual world. It is important to discover in each state that we will not achieve anything through the force of our egoistic desire. Only by breaking away from it spiritually and fully relying on the Creator, on His force of bestowal, the second force that exists in nature, and connecting our spiritual life with it can we move forward step by step. The Creator will put obstacles in our way each time by placing new conditions, and we will turn to Him again and again above these obstacles. All states must be perceived as necessary stages, degrees that we must go through in order to build the correct appeal, and external accompanying conditions. Everything is arranged in an optimal way to lead us to the correct request. As it is written, "And it came to pass that the sons of Israel sighed because of the work, from the slavery, from being under the control of the egoism." This is when we emerge out of the control of egoism, that is, from the Egyptian exile, enter the upper world, and reach the revelation of the Creator to the created beings. The Creator gives us the force of bestowal, the force of faith above reason, above the force of reception. The main thing is to realize more and more clearly that everything depends only on the Creator. The difficulties, their resolution, and the correct answers, everything comes to us from the Creator. Only one thing depends on us, not to give up our attempts, but to pressure the Creator through the ten, to ask and demand He give us His force in order to resemble Him. Then we will become sons of the Lord your God. Having received the force of bestowal, like the one He has. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson March 5, 2021, everything is obtained by the power of prayer. New Life 1300. Listening connects.
Shalom lachem, toda shatem mitzarfim.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman.
Shalom, Rav Lightman.
Shalom.
We can't hear you. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitzamazoz. Hello. And today we want to talk about listening. In life, we have many different interactions with people. We like when people listen to us. We try sometimes to listen to others. I'm not sure how good at it we really are. We'll try to learn something about this today. Nitza, please. First of all, listening is a very active action that requires attention and concentration and the willingness to be there for the person that you're listening to. And today we'd like to talk a bit about listening because, like Owen said, it's a basic need that people have. We see it on a baby. Since he's born, he's looking for someone to listen to him, and if someone's not listening, then he makes sure that everyone does. So today we'd like to understand also maybe what's the difference between the ordinary way of listening, and there are many different techniques and methods that talk about listening, and the integral method of listening with the sole purpose of connecting people. So we'd like to understand how can listening bring people closer together, but, in order to warm up, maybe just to understand, why is it so important for people to be listened to? Every person has, self-pride, dignity. They want for people to listen to them, take them into consideration. And so we're very much concerned that people will listen to what we say. It seems to us that we're saying something important, something interesting, something that's good for everyone. And this is what everyone thinks. Because the main thing, I remember that this one time I was at a women's meeting. I don't know, there were about 200 women there, something like that. And the question was, by what order do we speak? Because 200 women, and when will it be my turn to talk? Meaning, it's something that really concerns a person, that he wants to sound his voice, he wants to talk, he wants for others to listen to him. They'll say what is their opinion about his ideas. And it doesn't matter even what are we talking about. A person wants to talk and for others to listen to him. Right, so if we're talking about an ordinary way of listening, then, a person, he communicates some kind of experience, emotion, whatever. And the person listening can grasp all these things. So it's an emotional, intellectual process. There are plenty of things that the listener has to turn on. So we'd like to understand inside this process, from within the understanding that this concept, principle of the connection or connection between people, that it makes our life better, that it improves our relationships and so on. We understand that we have to make this connection, establish it. How do we use them listening, which is seemingly something natural, in order to increase our connection? What's unique about connection for the sake, about listening for the sake of connection versus regular listening? Look, if I want to connect to some person, I show that I'm really listening and that what that person's saying is really important to me and that I'm responding and that I'm responsive and that I want to be in an interaction with that person, that he sees it, and this way we come closer. Is it important for you to express your desire to come closer to me when you're listening to me so that your listening will bring to a stronger connection between us? If I want to come closer to you, then, of course, I have to show that everything that you're saying is important to me. And then I can start asking questions and sounding my opinion. And this is how we reach a closer and closer connection. Sure. So would you define the what you just said as a basic principle if I want to be a better listener? So the first principle for the sake of connection would be to give importance to the speaker. Of course, if you want to connect to someone, then come up to them and say, I heard that you said this and this, or that and that, and I didn't exactly understand. Maybe you can elaborate a bit or explain in a few words. I'm very sorry, but it's really interesting to me. And then you kind of make contact with that person. What does that do to a person? You raise their importance. And what does it do to them? It raises their pride, their self-dignity, importance, esteem. What it catches a person on the inside? Their ego, very directly, very strongly, very internally. What happens inside a person when suddenly someone lets them feel that what they're saying is important? That I'm listening because what you're saying is important. Of course, he feels that he's important. If someone else wants to know what is he saying, then it's a sign that he's important to someone. And what happens inside of him then? His pride grows, self-dignity. He can no longer disregard that person because to the measure to which that person appreciates him, he has to appreciate him in return. Because otherwise, because by that, he actually elevates himself through the other person. And after a person that listens, the listener, he lets the other person feel that he's important and that he's listening. Now, the listener, what is his inner state? Now, he has to provide the person who's asking him, the person who was inspired by his words. He has to give him attention now and to explain to him what is going on and take care of him. By that, he buys him. He wins him over. So, the entire weight is on the listener. If there's an interaction between two people, then the listener that comes from a point of a place of curiosity and interest, please explain what you said, he takes the wheel into his own hands and starts controlling the situation. Of course, he controls the speaker. And, up until now we talked about the listener, about the power that the listener has. Now let's go to the speaker. Even before someone gives him the feeling that he's important, what does the speaker need? What does this need? I don't know, usually he wants for to be heard, that what he says, that it will be taken into account and that people will correctly respond to it publicly even. And after someone opens himself up to listen to you, and you're the speaker, and you start talking, as a speaker, what should you focus on when you talk so that this will bring you to a state of stronger connection when you speak? To respect the other person, that your response is very important to me, and the way you appreciate what I said, and that I don't really find so many people that can take interest in the things that I say, and it's very important to me and very close, your response. In short, in return, he has to awaken and elevate that person who responded. Okay, suppose I'm the listener. I listen to the speaker. Do I have to accept what he says in order for us to stay in connection? If I need support, if I need encouragement, then of course I appreciate that person that comes to me, and this is what I said, that he's interested in, you know, that he's interested, if not, then not. Agreeing with someone's words, is it a condition for the listening, for it to bring us to strong connection? For sure. You especially see it on women. I had this acquaintance, not a friend, but someone that I knew. And this is back when we were young, right? He could come up to any woman on the street and start talking to her. In 5 minutes, she was willing to go for a walk with him, to the movies. You know, he was really externally, he was nothing. Nothing special, but he knew how to talk in such a way. He knew what words to say. And we're talking about, you know, at the age of 20, 25, that I didn't see anyone refuse. What point does it touch in that person? How special of a woman you are. So is it what he said or his ability? Yeah, what he said, that there was no room here for, you know, there wasn't time for anything else, but a few words. And any woman really agreed to what he said because he spoke, you know, with great expression, beautifully. And sometimes I saw that he leaves, and you know that young lady used to look back as he left. She used to look at him, that she'd like to bring him back. He knew how to pay attention. Yeah. This is what we're looking for, attention. You gave this as an example for that. Well, it's not only in regard to women. Only in regard to women, it's more, you know, common, customary. So, when listening, when I'm the listener, suppose I'm not even, I'm listening, I'm not doing the talking, but the main thing that I give the other side is attention. Yeah, that they're important, that this person is important to me. And therefore, I have to accept his words, not to criticize him or tell or say this or that, but I do have to agree with the other side. Yes, I agree and very much appreciate, and not only what I heard, but also himself, his personality, to accept him as he is without trying to change him. That's the main thing. Why? Because I appreciate the human part in him, the human in him. What he said, we could agree on some short passage from what he said, but here I have to express my attitude toward him as toward a complete human being. Okay, I want to give you a situation we're all familiar with from life. And let's look at it from the point of view of integral listening that can bring people closer together. the mother. She is very much engaged in what she's doing. Her son comes up, and he really, really wants to tell her something. And he needs for her to listen. But she's really bothered. She has 1,000 different things to do. And she says, honey, I can't right now, maybe later. And he tries later. And later, she's also very busy. You know, a mom in between, she has to this and that, 1,000 different things. And the child needed for her to listen. And he can't find that. He can't get her attention. He can't get her to listen. In such a case, how do you have to look at things differently and to allow room for listening with everything that's going on nonetheless? Because otherwise it distances them. She has to bring him into her workload and for him to talk there. What do you mean? Very simply, that what she's doing, that he'll stand next to her and do also something what she's doing and to tell her what he wants to tell her. And he, the speaker, will feel, we divided into speaker and listener, right? So she has to allow him, meaning when he wants to express what he has on his heart, she has to make room for him to listen to him, even though that she's busy. Right. And now that he's talking, how should he relate to this? He has to understand that it's not exactly going as he planned, that she'll sit down and look at his mouth moving and listen with both ears to what he says. It's not happening. It's unrealistic. Life demands something else, and therefore he has to understand that if he'll join her life, then he'll be able to express everything that he wants. A mother, when she listens while doing something, what should she focus on for them to click? That she's willing to listen to him in anything and everything, only that there are things that are, you know, beyond her own desire. She can't control it. Does that have an impact on the child that she's listening? She's giving him an example. We grow from these examples, and later on, it makes a human being out of us. It's an example for what? For the correct kind of connection, the correct connection for perception of reality, really. And how is that related to perception of reality? It has an impact over what? My mom was a doctor, my dad was a doctor, and when mom used to come home after work as a doctor, you know, it's terrible. I saw in her how she's really bothered and drained. And she, you know, then she goes into the housework. And there too, she has enough worries. And I really saw that she has to work from morning till evening and that she doesn't have the time to listen to others. And how can I reach her and pull her attention to me? And therefore, I tried as much as possible not to burden her. You're a good kid. No, I found myself in other things. I want to give you another example. Many times a person feels something and he needs for someone to listen. And suppose he meets a friend and he tells him about whatever it is. And that friend, that all in all I want for him to listen, he's not listening. And half a second later, he already knows, tell me, what's the solution? I didn't ask about the solution. I want for someone to listen, to open their heart to me. And many times, we jump to, look, I'll tell you what to do. You didn't ask, but I already know what. Why is it so? Why are we so jumpy? Because you're not interested in the connection, but in the result. Okay, what do you mean? This is what it's about. Many times people want to connect to us. and they catch some idea, some story, something that happened, and we think that that's the main thing. But that's not the main thing. But the main thing is that we will give them attention, that maybe we'll sit on a bench someplace together and talk. This is how you have to pay a bit more attention to what is that person's purpose by doing what he's doing. Usually it doesn't have to directly do with the topic of the talk itself, but the topic is just a reason. So many times, actually, a person, thanks to the problem or distress that he experiences, he's looking for connection. He doesn't look for someone to solve his problem. True. Now, many times we see that if he is listened to, then he finds the strength to solve the problem himself and so on, because he already got the attention. Yeah. Most of our pleas to each other aren't in order to find a solution. But usually it's a result of, you know, lack of confidence or support from the other side. It's important to us that we're important to others. But not that I will be really happy to listen to their opinion and act accordingly. There are barely such cases. Okay, one more thing about the integral approach. We're talking about the approach, the connection between people. But is there some additional element that joins into this process when there is some kind of good listening between people?
It
seems that ordinary listening is an interaction between two, three or more people and so on. Is there some additional factor that joins in when there is real, open, good, qualitative listening that comes out of a desire and the importance that you give to the other side? Is there some additional factor that joins into the system? There could be 1,000 different factors. What do politicians do? How is it between a husband and wife and a family or parents and children? Or at work, and everything. It turns out that we use all these situations in order to gain something completely different that is unrelated to the topic of the talk and so on. This is what we do. Suppose there's good listening. It creates a pleasant atmosphere. What is that pleasant atmosphere as opposed to an unpleasant atmosphere that's created when there is no listening? You have to work on the interconnection that exists between people. What do you mean by interconnection? That the other person that I talk to, first and foremost, I have to show them that I'm interested in our connection. I'm interested in it. And that no matter what happens, I feel pleasant to be with him, next to him, to be inspired by his words. And that I enjoy being next to him. For me, it's a time of pleasure. And he has to feel that he's doing me a big favor and that I really appreciate his attention and time that he dedicates. Okay, when there is already a connection made between the person talking and the person listening, in the contact between them, is it something, you know, just for that instant, or is there real contact, heart-to-heart contact made here? It all depends on how each of them sees the future, thinks about it. It's up to them. If it's a pleasant kind of contact, connection, then each of them will be interested to continue it. And it's all important about how do we seal this talk, or do we continue meeting in some way? How do I invite that person for a cup of coffee or to go together to a restaurant or something? Depends on... Okay. Suppose I see that someone talked to me and I wasn't really listening. What am I supposed to understand about myself and that? But it's an important talk. Yeah. Call that person and say that you didn't really understand probably what his intention was when you talked, and you're really asking them to, you know, explain it some more, that it's really important to you, but that by nature you don't grasp things from the beginning. Yeah, but that's in retrospect. But when we're talking, what stands in the way of listening there and then? Maybe their personality rejects you, maybe you're in a certain inner state. But even without, in regard to that person that's in front of me, inside of me, what stands in my way of listening? Because the order of thoughts that are appearing in you now aren't exactly according to what's going on. Before you go to some talk, to something good, nice, important, you have to rate some sequence of things that you want to scrutinize and then try and scrutinize them. And if not, you can ask. And if not, you can listen. If not, you can connect. But for them to be interested, to see that you're appreciating this connection. So the thoughts that run through my head were more important than what you said, and that's why I didn't listen. That too. Each of us is full of worries and concerns. What's the most important thing for us to take from this show about listening? The main thing is not how much you understand what you're being told, but the measure to which the person that you're meeting with, that he's inspired by the way you relate to them, treat them, your attitude towards them. That's the most important thing, to respect that person, but in a good, nice way, you know. If it's a woman, then to insinuate a bit about her beauty, about how she projects a good atmosphere around herself and so on. It depends on, you know, how can you talk to her? And so on. There are many things here that I'm not an expert in. So what is your expertise in regard to listening? For a long time, it's a long time now that I'm not meeting any people. And, you know, I'm all about teaching, and that's it, practically. So, you can't say that I meet people so that I have to think about how do I influence them. What does a Kabbalist listen to? His own heart. And the way that every time he can elevate himself above his own heart. Elevate himself where? To a higher degree of an order to bestow. To a deeper connection with people. Not with people, but the force of bestowal that we exist in, the upper force. Each of us is an egoist, a desire to receive, to enjoy, and we're all in a kind of bubble, galaxy, of the force of bestowal and love. And then we have to listen, not to people or to ourselves, but to that force that we exist in. Dr. Lightman, that's beautiful. Thank you very much. Till next time, we wish you all the best.
My new article on LinkedIn, When the Ego Rots. For as long as we can remember, the ego has been our ally. It has earned us great achievements. We came out of the caves, developed agriculture and learned to produce our own food, became lords of the earth and of the sky, defeated plagues and enabled every person on earth to potentially have a life that only 2 centuries ago were fit for kings. In the past several decades, the ego has taken over everything we do, and our relationships with others are now based not only on the desire to build ourselves, but to a great extent, if not mostly, on the aspiration to hurt, humiliate, and even destroy others. Once the ego begins to focus on destruction, it ruins everything. When this happens, it is time to bid it farewell before it drags us into another world war. But we have not come to this. While some of us enjoy unimaginable affluence, others are worse off than their ancestors had ever been. They die like flies without food, water, or dignity. We could have defeated the plagues, but it seems as though we ourselves have become a plague that is infesting the world with bile and abhorrence for our fellow humans, for all of life, and for our planet. The ego, which has gotten us all that we have, appears to have rotted and is now destroying everything that we've achieved through it. As long as we used the ego to grow and develop, it worked in our favor. We've always used the ego not only for development, but also to defeat enemies and rivals, but we did not let it take over. In the past several decades, the ego has taken over everything we do, and our relationships with others are now based not only on the desire to build ourselves, but to a great extent, if not mostly, on the aspiration to hurt, humiliate, and even destroy others. Once the ego begins to focus on destruction, it ruins everything. When this happens, it is time to bid it farewell before it drags us into another world war. We still don't see it yet. We still think that the ego is our friend, but as all parents tell their children, stay away from bad company. The ego is now bad company because it looks for nothing but troubles, to fight with everyone and destroy everyone, so we must turn away from it or it will drag us down along with it. There is an alternative. The way forward is by joining hands and joining forces. The ego may not be satisfied in this way because we will not destroy anyone, but we, as opposed to our egos, will gain security, joy, and confidence in our future. Today, only a united society can thrive. Only when people of different backgrounds, faiths, and ideologies join hands, they can create a vital and pliable society that can adjust to the changing circumstances in the world. When only one ideology reigns, it quickly becomes rigid and fragile, and will collapse before long. Just look at what happened in Nazi Germany, Fascist Italy, and the Communist Soviet Union to realize that to succeed, diversity is a requirement, and diversity cannot thrive where the ego reigns. It's time to dethrone the ego. My new article on LinkedIn, The Case for Paradoxical Thinking. Paradoxical thinking is something that various systems, such as educational systems or various advanced organizations, are trying to promote. We feel comfortable when matters are unambiguous, but it turns out that the ability to keep in mind conflicting ideas develops people's minds very effectively. Paradoxical thinking contributes to people's mental health, mental development, and builds a better society overall. But what is the highest level of paradoxical thinking that we can achieve? Let's examine some insights. Another paradox that can develop the world is our relation to our raging egos. On the one hand, the egoistic desire to subdue everyone is destroying our lives. On the other hand, if we learn how to use our egos correctly, we will be able to turn them into what is called help made against him. In other words, we will be able to turn them into levers for development that will raise us from one level to the next on the spiritual ladder. When we are confined to one system of thinking, contradictions confuse us and create internal collisions. Alternatively, when we develop a dual system of thinking, we can maintain one thought in one system and a completely opposite thought in the other. This allows for complete opposites to exist within us simultaneously, since each thought is in a different system. Therefore, our challenge is to know how to build an additional system of thinking. This is what the wisdom of Kabbalah is all about. Imagine that there are tiny insects that do not grasp the dimension of height, and live only according to their perception of the surface. They can move from side to side in their space, but not up or down. In relation to them, we have another level of perception. Similarly, a person who lives in one system of thinking feels the world very differently from one who lives in two systems of thinking. It is one thing to understand this notion, but it is a different matter altogether to achieve it. To do that, we must awaken evolutionary forces that will develop that system within us. We cannot really know what these forces are, but we don't really need to. It is enough to want to develop them to make them act on us more forcefully. The trick, if you will, is to know how to approach that evolutionary force and make it build in us that advanced system. One good example of an exercise in building such a dual system is the biblical story of the tying of Isaac. God said to Abraham about Isaac, "Through Isaac your descendants shall be named," Gen. 21:12, meaning that Isaac was to have children of his own and continue Abraham's dynasty. But on the other hand, God instructed Abraham to offer him as a burnt offering, Gen. 22:2. Which would prevent the continuation of Abraham's dynasty. How can one reconcile such contradicting instructions? This is when the third party must intervene. In such a case, we cannot use reason, since it will direct us one way or the other. Instead, we must summon, meaning want a higher intellect, from which the contradiction came, the root of the paradox, to come and reconcile the conflict. In the wisdom of Kabbalah, the root, where all the conflicts are reconciled, is called the Creator. The Creator is the general force in nature. It is the force that sustains all of reality, the root of the universe and everything that evolves in it, the origin of our lives. In the end, each and every contradiction points precisely to it, to the source from which everything comes and in which everything unites. Since we cannot connect the opposites with our current mind, we must replace our minds with an upgraded mind that we receive from that higher source. This is how paradoxes elevate us to a spiritual level. Another paradox that can develop the world is our relation to our raging egos. On the one hand, the egoistic desire to subdue everyone is destroying our lives. On the other hand, if we learn how to use our egos correctly, we will be able to turn them into what is called help made against him. In other words, we will be able to turn them into levers for development that will raise us from one level to the next on the spiritual ladder. Our spiritual aspiration should not be to erase the ego from the world, but rather to want it to remain and even grow. As we strain to rise above it, to cover it with a good relation toward others, we also rise to higher degrees in spirituality. The key to dealing with paradoxes is therefore in shifting from a system where we shift from thinking only of ourselves into a system where we think about others, feel their needs and understand them. In this way, we build within us an additional system, which will provide us with contradicting views. Then, when we learn how to connect those views, a higher intellect will appear among us, which will resolve today's paradoxes at a higher level of connection and complementation. My new article on LinkedIn, Should We Resist Election Fatigue? On March 23rd, Israelis will go to the polls for the fourth time in less than 2 years. There is a saying in Israel that one who votes influences one's future and the future of the country. Voter turnout in Israel is similar to that to other democratic countries, but this time, the fourth election in less than 2 years, many are saying they will pass on the chance to influence. People are fed up, disillusioned, and don't believe in the system anymore. I think it's fair to say that people are experiencing what we might call election fatigue. The unity of the nation is, of course, the only value that I see as important. If we have unity, we will resolve all other problems and carry out our obligation as a Jewish nation. However, you can only unite with the living, not with the dead. Therefore, currently, my one and only question when I cast my vote is who will do the best job of protecting Israel from its enemies. I understand them. I, too, can feel this apathy creeping in. Nevertheless, I think we should not succumb to it. Israel is unlike any other country. There are many issues to resolve here: poverty, inequality, high cost of living, lack of opportunities to the disadvantaged, social rifts around every corner, and countless other problems. However, we will not be able to resolve any of them if we don't have a country where we can work on them. And because we are under a constant threat of destruction, to me, the sole criterion for choosing who to vote for is security. Israel's prime minister must be someone who can secure Israel's existence, and everything else, completely everything, comes next. The unity of the nation is, of course, the only value that I see as important. If we have unity, we will resolve all other problems and carry out our obligation as a Jewish nation. However, you can only unite with the living, not with the dead. Therefore, currently, my one and only question when I cast my vote is who will do the best job of protecting Israel from its enemies. I am not saying this from a political perspective whatsoever, but from a spiritual one. In order to perform its role in the world, in order for Israel to set an example of unity and be a light unto nations, it must first of all exist, and second, it must exist in security so it can focus on building unity above the incalculable rifts in the Israeli society. This is why I attribute such importance to security, and this is why it is a spiritual consideration rather than a political one. Politics aside, I think it is time for the people of Israel to start being what the people of Israel should be, to fulfill its obligation to the world, unite, and set an example of rising above all differences. The ingathering of the exiles has already happened on the physical level. Jews immigrated to the state of Israel from all over the world. Still, internally, we have remained apart. Now we must perform our spiritual task and turn the exiles into one nation, a symbol of union above division. This will be the realization of our vocation, our gift to the world, the best, and indeed only guarantee to our safety and prosperity. Mutual guarantee. The need for mutual guarantee stems from the fact that we all belong to the integral Kli, to the globe. Every desire in it, even the smallest and insignificant, can become the highest and most important if you turn the ball so that this point is at the top. It turns out that no matter how you turn the ball, one of its points will be higher than all of them. If you turn the ball a different way, then another point will be at the top. Therefore, the mutual guarantee is an immutable law, obligatory for correcting the breaking of the common soul. Then we merge into one soul. There is no other way to make of yourself that soul which the Creator created and broke. After all, every point in this soul must be the highest and vouch for everyone. There is nothing more important than mutual guarantee because it brings us to the likeness of the Creator. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, March 4, 2021, The Mutual Guarantee. gradual transition to spirituality. Question: is there a connection between crossing the Mux and crossing the Red Sea? Surely the Kabbalists described this transition, but they did not call it Muxum. Answer: in general, yes. Question: are there any other descriptions that speak of the Muxum in allegorical language? Answer: the fact is that man's exit from an egoistic property to an altruistic one, that is, the transition from one world to another, occurs gradually. And it is impossible to clearly indicate, now it is happening this way and then another way. This is all associated with many changes in a person. Question: can we say that the exodus from Egypt, when a group of 3 million people left it, is crossing the Muxum? Answer: the exodus from Egypt is a whole process including crossing the Red Sea, then approaching Mount Sinai after a long time, and receiving the Torah. And then there was breaking of the tablets, a seemingly untoward way out of egoism. But we see that it could not be otherwise and that is how they had to come out. In general, all this is a transition. You cannot register it with a date or one action. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, February 6, 2020. How long does it take to cross the Muxum? Question: how long can it take to cross the Muxum? Answer: it is not possible to say for sure. Maybe a few years, maybe even a few decades. It all depends on how much a person invests, how deep his soul is. If he has a serious, deep soul, this means that he has a great egoism, and then it is very difficult for him to cross the Muxum, to exit into the feeling of the upper world, to begin to correct himself and others in it. There are people who went through it quite easily, even in a couple of years. As a rule, it depends on the size of the soul's egoism. Therefore, a lot of work is required with heavy egoism. But then this soul can do much in our world and in the upper world. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, February 6, 2020. If you change your intention, you change the world. Question: you often say that life begins beyond the barrier, Muxum. Can we assume that the place people go after death is behind the Muxum? Answer: no. In Kabbalah, a quality is called a place. Our world is a quality of egoism, a place where we feel it. Question: can we say that the crossing of the Muxum is identical to the change of a person's intention? Answer: yes. This is absolutely accurate. If earlier all his intentions were only for himself, for the sake of his egoism, when he imagined himself in the center of the world and did everything only for himself, now he puts the Creator in the center of the world and does everything only for him. This is a completely different feeling. Question: how does a Kabbalist see this world when he crosses the Muxum? Answer: the Kabbalist sees the world as an absolute good, as bestowal and love that fill absolutely all space, and he exists in these qualities. Their revelation is the revelation of the upper world. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, February 6, 2020. Michael Leitman, on Quora: what does the Eighth Commandment consist of? Thou shalt not steal. The Eighth Commandment, thou shalt not steal, is the same as the previous commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, with the sole difference being that adultery and theft relate to two different levels of desires. Nature is constructed of four levels of desire: inanimate, vegetative, animate and speaking, also, human. These four levels of desire exist in nature in general as well as within us. Theft is then a similar action to adultery, but it is a prohibition at a different level of desire. Committing adultery is when we use people for the sake of self-benefit, whereas theft is when we use the inanimate, vegetative and animate levels of nature for the sake of self-benefit. Therefore, where thou shalt not commit adultery is an act of using others for self-benefit at the human level, thou shalt not steal is an act of using the inanimate, vegetative and animate levels of nature for self-benefit. Based on the TV show, Spiritual States with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman on December 26, 2019. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. The value of the Kabbalistic archive. Question, how do you feel about the books that your students write? Answer, I have not personally read these books. In general, I do not know in what form they are produced and how they are processed. I believe that if a person wants to seriously study Kabbalah, he should take notes from my lectures. Over the past 25 years, there have been videos of all the lessons that I teach every day for at least 3 hours. Moreover, during the day I hold various meetings, conversations, and explanations. All this huge mass of information is stored in our archive. You just need to try to understand it and start studying it. In addition, there are courses, all kinds of preliminary classes. Basically, you need to go through them quickly and start my classes. I do not in any way deny the books my students write. Among them there are people who have been studying Kabbalah for decades. But it seems to me that serious studies of Kabbalah are in my video archive. From KabTV's Questions About Kabbalistic Books October 22, 2019.